Hey, welcome to Switching Lanes. This brand new podcast celebrates success stories from people who have had a significant change in their careers and in their life in general. I'm Molly from the Skills Network, and in each episode, I'll be chatting to some pretty exciting people who have switched lanes, finding out about those moments that inspired them to make the change and led them to where they are today. In this episode, I'm chatting with Jonathan Millian, who has a very unique story. From delivery driver to running the UK's breakthrough market research agency, Jonathan has never stopped learning and adapting to whatever life throws at him. Hello, Jonathan. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Molly. Thanks for the invite. It's lovely to be here.
You've obviously not had a traditional route into the market research field. You started as a delivery driver, but how did you get into that in the first place, and how has it led you to where you are today?
So I founded a business, and today I'm the head of innovation of that business, and we can go into that in a bit more detail. It's a market research insight agency, so we help our clients innovate and find out critical insight from their consumers. But you're right, that's a long way from where I started. When I started off, it was my first real job was as a delivery driver. Which was great, and you know, I wasn't academic. I fell out of school and started work straight away, and that was the first job that I really liked and really wanted to keep hold of. So I did that for a couple of years as part of the growth process. I worked for a company and soon ended up in the office, so on the more logistical side of things. And one of our clients there was Unilever, and we used to deliver all their product testing items to their consumers. They had a local panel in Leeds. We were very lucky to be the company that they'd chosen to work with to deliver everything. And it was generally quite a lot of, so 200 to 300 consignments at a time, all to domestic addresses. And it wasn't really the kind of normal freight that was going through the systems at the minute. So we had to find new ways to do that, new systems, and there was lots of safety things to take into account. Some of them were aerosols. And just as we were learning all this and finding the right systems for the client, the company went bust. It just vanished. We literally turned up to work one day and it wasn't there. So to fast forward a couple of weeks from that, I started talking to all the clients that we had, Unilever in particular, because it was work that I enjoyed. And I took over that contract, but as a private contractor, and bought myself a little van and speaking to other clients as well. And we're doing other things. We weren't just solely doing that. But ultimately, that's what we took on. And that's how we survived that period of time. And it was great. We were, you know, the function we were working for in Unilever was very small, but it was growing, and they were doing great work. And we were part of that. And they had three partners at that time. So they had a logistical partner who helped to pack all the products and make sure that there were the right products in the right envelope for the right person, pretty much that. They then gave them to me, and it was my job to make sure that they got to the right house at, you know, the right time. And then the third partner was a market research agency who I took all the completed products and questionnaires to. And there were various things that they had to do to that to turn it into a data report. And then that found its way back to Unilever. So quite a small number of partners, really, for a lot of work that was going on. But we could sense, and we could, because we were in the middle, we kind of learnt the problems that were happening on the logistical side of things. So quite often, because they'd be late to us or they'd be muddled up and in the wrong envelopes and that sort of thing going on. And then we also saw problems on the other side of the journey, which was the market research agency, they're taking too long to process the data or things like that. So we were quite engaged with the team then. You know, I'd taken somebody on and that, you know, I needed help. So that happened, and my wife was helping me all the time. So, and we didn't have an office, so we used to just borrow a corner of Unilever's office to do our little bit of work. It was just easy to say, look, why don't we have a go at packing them for you? You know, give them to us. Print all the letters, give us some envelopes, and we'll do that. And we'll take our time, we'll get it right, and you won't have any more problems. So that happened pretty quickly. Within a year or so, we were doing that. And then, you know, so quite heavily involved in the field work then. It was, you know, they were down to two partners, but we were still hearing that there were issues from this market research side of things. So that needed a bit more of a step change to get into that. That was computers and software and methods and understanding market research better. So that's really where a lot of training kicked in for me. And we got the confidence of the client, who said, well, this is a bit different. This isn't packing envelopes. This is something that, you know, is really important and has to be done properly, because we're making pretty big decisions on the back of that information. But I really wanted to do it. I was really interested in it. I liked looking at the other end of the market research and seeing the reports coming in, seeing what the why we were doing all this in the first place. So I stuck with it, and I did put myself through some market research society training courses to understand the foundations of market research. We invested in the computers that were needed to hold the software. I then went to get all the training from the survey software data that we were using. And over the course of, I don't know, probably 6 months, I was ready to have our first trial. And the way we did it is I said, look, let's keep it going to where it goes now. When those questionnaires come back, I'll use the same questionnaires to do the same job and put the data into the system. And then you can have a look at my report and we can see where it is. We can have a comparison. And I passed the test. It was great. It happened really quickly. And to cut a long story short, within a year, we were their fieldwork partner. So that process of packing the product to get the data report back to a client is called the fieldwork. And we were doing that, and we were really busy because they were growing, you know, more brands from within the business. You know, you'll know Unilever, it's massive. They do loads of personal care, loads of laundry, loads of hair care. It was all finding its way into this technical testing centre in Leeds where we were working. And we just grew from there, really. So that was how we step changed from a delivery driver into a fieldwork agency.
So going back to that point when you had that sort of almost your first point of training, how vital do you think that training was for you to turn around yourself and be like, hang on a minute, for us to do this job correctly for Unilever and deliver the best we can, we need to step our game up and we need to understand this knowledge. How vital do you think that point in your life was?
It was totally vital. It wouldn't have happened if... So the first thing that we took on, the packing envelopes, you can just get taught how to do that by the people that you know what an envelope is, yeah. Know what a piece of paper is, and know what a product is. But when you're getting into managing data and, in particular, personal private data, and then having to turn it into a report that people can understand, the team we were working with probably knew how to do it, but they wouldn't have had the patience to teach us how to do it. The motivation just wasn't there. So we had to go off and learn how to do that. And even that wasn't good enough. We had to then prove that we had not just turned up, not just been, you know, a wallflower in that room. We'd engage, we'd listen to it, we'd learnt the skills that we needed to be able to take on this resource for them. And without it, they just wouldn't have entertained us. So it was incredibly important.
And did you feel, with you've been at Blue Yonder over 15 years now, so how do you refresh your skill set when there's nobody to tell you what you need to do? So how do you keep going with retraining and keeping up with the times as it is?
Well, first of all, I think there's, you know, I'm always learning. I learn something every day. I think it's because I've done a lot of training in the past, I've done the foundation, I've done the basic level. A lot of the things I look at is probably the top end of training available. But if you use business as an example, you know, we get business coaching all the time and we constantly learn because cycles only last so long.
Mm.
What you learn at one stage will only get you so far until you're in a different world and you need a whole new set of training to help you through the next set of problems that are coming your way. So I think business coaching is a good example of that. But then also our industry is changing all the time. So a major part of our industry at the minute is data science and just, you know, digging deeper into data than we ever have before to learn more, because businesses and manufacturers and brands hold so much data that they've looked at the surface level to deal with the problem in hand, but they've not gone deeper than that. So that is a big part of how brands are finding their edges at the minute, and that takes training. I don't understand how to do, you know, conjoint analysis for 6 projects over different, you know, cohorts. I would have to go through training for that, and I like to when I've got the time to do it. But I suppose the other, it would be duplicated because we've got a data science team that are already, we've committed them to train on that, so they know how to do it. So if I ever get asked a question like that, I'm very lucky that I can filter them off, say, oh, you need to talk to Mike, because he knows all about that, and he'll talk about that for hours with you, and we can do that. So it's understanding whether you need to know it or whether you want to know it, and then keeping your learning mindset alive that way.
You touched upon your staff training then. So you've obviously built your business, and you've got staff working for you now. How do you look after their skill set and make sure that they're progressing within their roles? How do you do that?
Good question. There's two things we do. So we're very proud of the fact that, so we've got we've got 35 staff and growing. We probably recruit another 3 or 4 more this year on year. But we committed 225 hours of training to the business last year, and that's 225 hours of sessions. So there's more people in those sessions. So cumulatively, it's thousands of hours that we offer. And that's made up of various different training methods. So foundation level for the grads who are coming in and for the new fresh young starters who don't know anything about the business and just really holding the hand through, you know, what the industry is and giving them an overview, right through the basic training that they'll need to become efficient within their teams and to add value to the projects that we're doing, and then going up through the advanced levels and right up to the expertise levels. And, you know, I mean, we learned that from when we did another step change that we didn't talk about just then, which was, you know, after we'd been doing the field work for a long time, technical, which is the field we work in, so consumer technical insight, didn't really have that many agencies it could outsource to. And as the business, Unilever business grew, they were hitting brick walls in terms of skill set for it. So they had some very good internal researchers, and they built their own training systems and training courses for people. And we were invited onto that. So in about 2008, 2009, and we decided to go what's called full service, which means instead of just handing back the data that we've punched and we've processed, we would start doing the analysis on it. So we would start looking at the correlations and the and charting it and tabling it and giving, you know, helping them see what it really is and how to make the decisions. But we had to do a lot of training, and since then, you know, to grow, everybody has to be at a certain level before you can let them loose at this level on a project or that level on a project. And if you put them, two things happen. So if you put them in too early without the training, it scares them to death and they don't want to do it again. And then the other side of that is your client says, what the hell are you doing putting this person in here? Shouldn't it, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And is you know, this is just a waste of time and money. So we saw the value in it very quickly. You know, so we've got lines, we've got the exec level, we've got the senior exec, we've got the managers and the account directors and the directors, and everybody is expected to take part in training as part of their KPIs and as part of their development and growth.
And do you find, and we touched upon at the beginning, you said you weren't academic at all. Do you find that has affected your training as such, or is it not necessarily an academic thing that you're aiming towards? If it's a skill that you're more interested in, is that the route that you've gone down, or is it more academic?
You're absolutely right. So I hated school, didn't like it at all. And, you know, as soon as I could get away from it, I did. But then when I started the training I was a delivery driver for 2 years. It was boring as hell. It was awful, but it paid the bills and I did it. And you get out of bed to do that. But then when I started doing the training into market research, I just found something that I could do and I really liked, and I was thinking about it all the time. Yeah. And in my spare time, I was practicing and wanting to do more, and I was looking forward to the next projects that were coming up. So, and I think that's the guide on whether you're doing something that you should be doing or not. If you're thinking about it all the time and you're excited by it, and that's you know, to me. We need academics in our business, of course we do. You need really clever people who can, you know, build the foundations of what a business needs. But I think you also need the entrepreneurial, sharp people who are out there just, you know, spotting opportunities and running at them full speed ahead. And I think that's more the kind of person I am. And, you know, if you were to put me on a training course for something I didn't like, I'd be staring out the window and falling asleep. So, you know, I think it's really important that what you're doing is something that you love, and look out for that. It's a good guide for yourself to check yourself. Am I enjoying this? Is this good fun, or am I just ticking a box?
I think that's really important. And something I wanted to touch on was that some people listening to this now, they may not necessarily want to be the CIO of their own company and get to that stage, but they will face very similar sort of crossroads challenges to maybe what you have done. So what advice would you have to those people who are almost like worried to take that next step?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I've always been good at asking questions. So I always ask questions, you know, whether that's how somebody is versus how life's going versus if they've got any problems, is there anything we can do to help, have you got any challenges, that sort of thing. So I always push to be in a conversation. And whenever you're in a room, so young people, one of the bits of advice we give at Blue Yonder is, if you're a young person in a meeting, you know, a meeting that you might not have had the chance to get in before, just make sure you're heard. Ask a question. You know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Be happy to be the idiot that doesn't know something, because you're actually the person that someone's talking to, and it's a great opportunity that you've laid out for yourself. But in a proactive way, of course, you know, just always be thinking about the next step. So, you know, another piece of advice we give to our younger teams, well, throughout the teams, but we initiate it with the younger teams, is if you've got a problem, if there's a, you know, you're going to hit walls and things are going to go wrong, but when it does, don't just report that bit. Have a think about some solutions around it and go back and say, look, this has happened. We didn't want this to happen, but here's a potential way out of it, or here are two or three potential ways out of it. And just be helpful. Just don't throw a problem into someone's lap. You know, share it and be a part of it with them.
I love that, Jonathan. I actually heard a quote last week and I thought that just ties in exactly with what you've said. And it was from Bill Gates, and he says, success is a poor teacher. And I think what he was saying by that is, if you just keep being successful, you're never going to learn, you're never going to change direction and move to where you're actually meant to be.
Yeah, I'll stand next to Bill for that one. Yeah, I'm off for that.
Yeah. So, Jonathan, we've touched upon your career and your professional life, but going into your personal life, is there anything you've ever almost aspired to learn and retrain? That, and you've said that during your career you've learned to retrain, but there've always been things you've been interested in, so it's helped you create. Are there things outside of work that you've always wanted to do?
Ooh, not really. So it's my business has always been my hobby. I think that's fair to say. I feel I've managed it quite well, because I'm privileged to have a good business. It's really strong and it's growing, and we're attracting, you know, the right talent. And but it's happened at the right time in my life, because we're always at work. There's always something to do. There's always decisions to make, and there's always, you know, hurdles to get over. But 10, 15 years ago, when it was important that I was at home because my kids were young and toddlers, and I wanted to be at the school shows and at the nativities and, you know, taking them to the fair and doing all the stuff that dads should do, I had the freedom to do it, and I feel privileged to have had that time. And then, you know, the annoying years, as I call them, where you have to be a taxi driver for them, taking them everywhere. They've both passed the test now, so it's I'm in nirvana as far as that's concerned. But really, my business is my hobby. I just love it, because it's not really a traditional vendor level business. We're fortunate to have relationships where we are partners, and there's always co-creative, inventive projects going on that I can get my brain fully into and try and find solutions and ways of working at a really early exploratory level. So I'm always at work. But then when it comes away from that, you know, you just kind of want it to blow off steam, because it's a high pressure environment all the time, which, you know, is fine. But really, I just like to go out and socialise, and we've got lots of friends and we like to spend time doing that. And that reminds me, when I was younger, I think a pearl of wisdom that I had when I was younger is, on stressful days, you know, things went wrong, horrible things that, you know, were going to lead to a really difficult conversation. And as a young guy in your 20s, you dread it. And the way I always got around that was to just literally, you know, just move on from it for 5 or 6 hours. Just go home, turn your phone off, have a couple of beers, order a takeaway, watch a film, have a laugh with my wife, and worry about it in the morning. And needless to say, the problem was always a lot smaller in the morning when I decided to deal with it, rather than if I'd have let it ruin my evening and not slept very well. And you know, I've always kept to that discipline to do that. So if, you know, things are, if we feel that the pressure's building up, both me and Richard R&D have the same mindset on this. We just kind of drop everything and go out and you know, release that pressure, and then start again the next day. And it's a really help. Some people can do it, some people can't. I get that. Some people just have to stay stuck in the mud until they've sorted it out, and I respect that. But really, I think, you know, my life is a cycle of working and depressurizing amongst friends and family.
Okay, so Jonathan, we've touched on how your business is almost your hobby. So upskilling and outside of work would almost still lead you in the same path as your career. So It's probably fair to say you've almost had a bit of a smooth ride if it's your passion to get into it. But have you ever had to make any quite difficult decisions along the way that if you'd have done something differently, it could have totally changed the business or changed you in the direction you've gone in?
That's a good question. So there's always ups and downs. But you know, I think what we have always had around us is really good clients. Mm-hmm. And that works in two ways. So the good side of that is that you often are part of a development program, so you can see quite a long way into the future. The other side of that is, and it can feel very safe, that it can be a really strong relationship and you can feel, you know, wrapped in a blanket and be moving along with them very nicely. And that's always good. But then the other side of working with global companies like Unilever and Mars and Reckitt's is that when they make a business decision, it doesn't matter what the impact is on you. They've got much bigger problems going on. So for instance, we had an issue in around about 2004, 2005, whereas we got very comfortable, we got very good at what we were doing. We had a great relationship with our team in Leeds and the CTI team. And the business just decided to make a positive change for them, which was about moving. It was to make them more global. It was to, you know, move culture around the business and make sure it was one business rather than the Latin American business and the Asian business and the European business. And what they decided to do was uplift teams from a certain region and put them into another region and so on and so on. So all these people we'd worked with for, I don't know, six, seven years, we just moved around and we had this new set of people that came in and we had to form brand new relationships with them. Mm-hmm. And our business kind of just stopped overnight because they had their, you know, they'd done work here, even though they were based in Latin America, and they had partners that they wanted to work with. And I think what I learned at that point is you can't control the uncontrollables. I tried to and got myself very stressed about it because I was so frustrated that they couldn't see how brilliant we were. And now it's a stupid decision to go use anybody else. You should be working with us because it just makes perfect sense, especially to me. That it was, but I was just wasting my breath. The machine was so much bigger than little old, you know, Blue Yonder, that it was going to happen anyway. So I wasted a lot of time doing that. And I think if I'd have just got straight on to being a bit more positive, being a bit more proactive with the team that had landed and forming the relationship earlier than I did, and perhaps going off to talk to other clients and, you know, trying to form new relationships and build our business up that way, it had been a much easier process. The way I handled it was wrong, but I learned from it. And you know, there's been ultimate changes since where, you know, for instance, it does seem to be a cycle. Another 6 years after that, there was an issue where procurement came in and decided to manage all of the budgets with our client. And that became difficult because then all of a sudden, instead of somebody ringing up the phone and saying, "Hi, Jonathan, can you do this project next weekend?" And me saying, "Yeah, of course I can, no problem." It turned into a call from a procurement officer saying, "We're going out to five companies. If you're the cheapest, you'll get it." And it, you know, all the emotion and all the relationship building we'd put into that just vanished and was lost. Yeah. And it was just as frustrating for our face-to-face client as it was for us. But ultimately, again, there was nothing we could do about it. That is the decision the business has made. And what we had to do very quickly was come up with a plan of how we were going to approach that. And I think that's how we've had to learn. So how you deal with bumps in the road, it's very easy to feel sorry for yourself and sit down and do nothing, but that's the worst thing you can do. You've got to just look what is in your control, what can you do, get a plan and get moving, get on with it.
So your bumps in the road, that is in your professional sense. What about in your personal? I don't want to describe having kids as a bump in the road. I've got two myself. But when that does happen, and I know you've got two yourself, your career changes in a different way. Like you might still be doing the same thing, but your sense of responsibility and, oh, hang on a minute, I've now got little people that I need to provide for. It, for me anyway, completely changed my ethos at work and how I would delivered my day, really. So did that change for you? Did you feel more responsibility for your business to succeed at that point?
Yeah, you do. So you turn from having a bit of a laugh to being a provider, and it does get serious, and you probably just start to think a bit further than you normally would.
Yeah.
You know, before kids, I probably didn't look much further than a couple of months, but with kids, yeah, you know, that turns into years. But then, you know, the life stages kick in for you, don't they? So before you know it, you're thinking about dropping them off at school. And I mean, we were very lucky because Claire, we were so busy with the fieldwork part of the business that we could afford for Claire to be a full-time mum. And that took the pressure off me a lot because although I was there for breakfast and I was there for the important times, I was mainly at work and mm-hmm. building the business up. But it really does, you're right, it does change your outlook. But, you know, even if you've got a learning mindset, you know, we approached our parenthood like that. We were forever watching, you know, programs on how to get your kids to sleep through the night, how to get your kids to eat vegetables, how to get your kids to do this. And Claire's a lot better than me, but, you know, applying the discipline for that to happen is another great learning curve that you go through at that stage in life. So I think it's just about whether you want to learn along the way or just think you can crack on with it and get on with it. I think there's two very different approaches.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Looking back now and reflecting back, do you think there's anything you would change about certain decisions you've made along the way, or are you everything happens for a reason kind of person?
So what I have learned is, so I've wasted so much time and effort and luckily not too much money on just creating solutions that weren't needed. And I think you can be so keen and energetic when you're a young person to please somebody that you just get an idea, you think they're going to love it, and you run off and you build it. And I think what is a bit of good advice for younger people building a business or within a business, just trying to build their own growth and develop themselves, is only create something if it's needed. So if we go back to the earlier part of the conversation, which is ask questions, those questions should be related to how could we make your life easier? What does that look like? And then find out when there's a need. And you know, a lot of the stuff that comes back is, you know, just sounding off and things you can't probably help with. But there'll be a gem in there somewhere that you can pick up on, develop, and take back to them as a solution. And that's how you're going to get taken seriously. And that's what people are looking for all the time.
So it's a different world now that we live in. And you've gone from setting up one of the most successful businesses. How different do you think it would have been if you'd have done that now? So now you have the accessibility we have these days to social media, to your training courses, to everything is so much easier. Do you think you had it harder back then because you didn't have access to that, or was it almost easier because you weren't aware of things like that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's both. So I think in terms of communication, social media and modern email and Teams and all the things that we can just jump on and sort problems out straight away is groundbreaking and makes business so much easier. I think training was harder to a degree because it wasn't as available as it is now. You know, training courses were quite expensive and they were often face to face and they were paper based, and you had to go to London or you had to go to Bristol or wherever these courses were. You had to get there, big investment both financially and time. Whereas they're all done online now. You can just rock up to any training course, you know, at a day's notice. You know, I remember having to wait 2 to 3 months for the next training course I needed, which is a lifetime in today. Nobody would wait 3 months for anything, but we had no choice. We had to. So I think it's a little bit of both. And really, the problem with training being so readily available is you could do too much of it. I think there needs to be a period of time after you've done the training for you to, you know, study it, implement it, test it, and adapt it to you and your particular need. And, you know, because that's the other thing to say about training. It's going to give you the skills, but it's your job to make them fit what's in front of you and to make it, you know, to mesh them together so that you're getting the best value from them. Sorry if I haven't answered your question directly there, but I think it's both. I think it's, you know, social media has made it easier to communicate and for the business to work at pace and to scale faster. But ultimately, the skills in the old days were definitely a lot harder.
And if you could go back in time, Jonathan, staring your younger 20-year-old self in the face, what advice would you give to him?
So probably what we've already said, you know, keep asking questions. I was a pain in the backside. I was always asking questions, and you know, I can, you know, now I've got a better meter for body language. I think back I can tell people just wanted to get out of the room. But you know, ask questions and good questions. Make sure that you're adding value to a conversation. Only innovate, only create something if it's actually needed, and then don't be sensitive if it's wrong. You know, just fail fast and move on and get on to another solution that will work. make some time to relieve pressure or you'll burn yourself out. You know, make sure, just be selfish at times and shut the problems out and give yourself some time to fully recharge and recover. Rome wasn't built in a day, so you've got to have a little bit of step back from problems and work out how to approach them. And then just, you know, probably what I didn't do quickly enough was get involved with business coaching. Don't assume just because the numbers are rolling in and you're doing really well that you've got a strong business. You know, there's always something you can do to make your business stronger. I probably wish I'd started that 5 years before I did. I started that in 2014. We've got all the data. When you track the growth from 2014 to now, it's probably 3 times faster than it was before that. So, you know, just probably start with the coaching as soon as you can afford it.
And that leads me nicely onto my next question. So as a CIO of the company, I feel like for you that there isn't a ceiling, that you want to still keep going no matter what direction that takes you in. So what is next for Jonathan?
So we have a really strong UK presence, and it's growing, and we're getting into, you know, as our team is growing and we're bringing these really talented people in, we're spreading across more clients. But the question we always get asked is, can you do this in Argentina? Can you do this in China? Can you do this in North America? So we're really focused. The next 2 years will be doing what we do, doing it really well. We've created this blueprint of a model that works and that clients like and that offers value. Let's do that in Southeast Asia. Let's do that in Latin America. Let's do that in North America. But in a modern way, so in a faster, better, cheaper way than it's been done before. So probably, you know, satellite offices with a couple of client people in there, and then, you know, restore the factory back in the UK and manage our partners from there. But yeah, to answer your question, it's just about becoming more global, really, just expanding the business that way.
And is there like a certain point that you want to reach to and you'd be happy, or do you think you will just keep going and when the next challenge comes, just face that and keep going with that?
So we are scaling, but it's about pace, really. We're very proud that we have no investors. We are 100% privately owned, and we've never borrowed money to do it, and we've always reinvested our profits to do that, and that's where we want to be. How far that will take us is the unknown, really, but at the same time, I think we'll challenge our growth on, is our culture changing? Our culture is so innovative, and, you know, there's no boundaries for people. We give people the freedom to have a go at something, do what they want. And that will be a meter that we use. If that feels like it's going away, we probably need to address the growth and see if there's a way to either grow and keep that going, or have we just got to a scale now where we're too big? And that'll be something that we're keeping a close eye on, because it's important that people, you know, we recruit based on those freedoms and tell people that they'll have those opportunities to develop themselves and to innovate and to fail and to try things. And it's important, it's our responsibility to ensure that that's always on the table. So if our culture starts to change, that's probably when we've got to where we want to be.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this as much as I did, please subscribe to Switching Lanes in your podcast app. And if you're feeling generous, leave us a review or even give us a rating. If you want to find out more about what the Skills Network could do for you, then head over to theskillsnetwork.com.